Hi, this is David Sweet. And before we jump into today's episode, a quick heads up: on Wednesday, October 8th, we'll be presenting the results of the 2026 Japan Salary Survey at the French Chamber in Nihonbashi, and we'd love to see you there in person. We're going to be talking about what's driving hiring, retention, and change in Japan right now. We'll talk about compensation trends, shifting motivators, team restructuring, and even how AI is reshaping roles. If you lead people in Japan, this is going to be a great session for you to attend. Again, that's going to be Wednesday, October 8th from 9 to 11. We'll put a link in the show notes. And feel free to take a look at our newsletter as well, which will have information about how you can sign up, or go to the French Chamber's website and sign up for that on October 8th. Look forward to seeing you there. And now on to our podcast.
Japanese leaders, Japanese people in general, are better listeners. It's just in my experience. I still remember a long time ago when I first got to Japan and I was talking to somebody and I said, I noticed that in Japan when people say something, like when I say something to them, I don't necessarily even hear if they agree or disagree. I just the, and they said, the person said, oh, well, we Japanese have a different room in our brain for other people's ideas. That would be, it would be wonderful if like American leaders, particularly, right? I'd probably throw in a lot of European leaders. It would be great if they could just absorb, hear something from their staff and then ask more questions about it and then withhold judgment and just kind of let it settle, right? The way the Japanese do that kind of thing, it's pretty amazing.
Welcome to the Focus Core podcast, where we dive deep into leadership, talent, and the evolving world of business in Japan to help you focus on your core business. Today, I am very excited to welcome my old friend, longtime friend, not old, longtime friend,
Older than you.
Andrew Silverman, President and Chief Enthusiast of AMT Group, which stands for Advanced Management Training Group. For over 30 years, Andrew has been developing global thinkers, helping leaders and teams boost their communication, leadership, and teamwork skills across Asia, North America, and Europe. He's also the author of the four-book series, Get a Grip, for a series on global readiness. And I think we'll talk about that in a new audio version, which is coming out. And when he's not energizing executives, he's a rock and roll star, a rock musician fronting his band, The Moonshots. Give them a listen. They are exceptional. Andrew brings a unique blend of business insights and creative passion, and I'm thrilled to welcome him to the show, and I'm giving him the best seat in the house.
I love it. Thank you.
So
Reference to the Moonshots song, Best Seat in the House.
there you
You're in
go.
it. You're
I'm
in
in it. Love it.
it.
I was on the treadmill running to the Moonshots the other day. Love it.
Excellent.
So, what first drew you to the field of leadership and talent development, Andrew?
So that is, I love your questions already. Because the draw wasn't to leadership at the time. Early on, the draw was to, first of all, there were four of us graduates from business school together in Tokyo, tossed out of the first company that hired us. After 3 months, they had no money to pay us.
Wow.
So we had a choice of starting a new company, getting a new job. What are we going to do? And so, of course, the draw employment, how are we going to feed ourselves? And we were already doing some training. So I was already helping people get into graduate school, mostly business school. So, and we had already trained, a couple of us had already taught, like I had taught at San Diego State and UC San Diego. So there was a draw toward education and toward self-development. We wanted a business where we could get paid to grow and develop ourselves. So even that phrase, developing global thinkers, it was about ourselves. We wanted to be developing. And that's where it started. The draw then just got stronger as we started working in the field and seeing companies needing some different training than what they had been exposed to previously. Because we started this back in 1992, if you can believe it.
Wow.
We put a sign that I think you'll see it some places. I'm not sure if it's on the website now, but it says, since 1992. That's all because my father said at the time when we founded the company, he said, "You need to put since 1992." I said, "Why, Dad? That's like this year." He's like, "Someday, son, that's gonna seem like a long time ago." And boy, does it for some people. It seems like yesterday to me, but for some
Because
people,
when we started using you for training, so that was
yeah.
about 10 years after you had started, and it was exceptional because it was different. It wasn't, we were trying to build one, we were trying to build leaders for our sales team at Wall Street, and then you would give us, and then we'd go back and we would absorb all that, and then we needed to do time management
Yes.
and play, and then we had to do space management.
Yes, that's right.
And it was just training after training, and you guys kept on developing new things for us
Yeah.
all the time. It was amazing.
Do you remember there was one? Were you there when Nick, maybe it was the team, wanted Nick to smile more? So we had
I
to do a
did.
smile training?
And then we had mirrors on our desks,
Yes.
everybody.
Oh, that's great. Well,
Yeah,
yeah,
the
because that was one of the hints. Somebody's had of putting a mirror on your desk for when you're making the calls
Yeah.
out, right? Hey, smile first, or if you can't smile, put a pen inside your mouth and grip it so that at least you'll get the endorphins going.
Not exactly, but the getting the grip is what you're meaning on that
No, a
one.
different grip. So that's Global Readiness Improvement Plan.
So what define global readiness? I mean,
I
that's it.
love
We're in a
it.
fragmented world. What does that
Yes.
mean to you?
And to me, and it's that in itself is evolving. When we started it, we basically boiled it down. It takes time to boil these things down, but we boiled it down to the attitudes, attributes, and abilities. That was a little alliteration there
Three
that
A's,
somebody
yeah, I
gave
like
us.
that.
Yes, the three A's that are required or needed to thrive in the global marketplace. So probably the exact things that you're looking for if you're recruiting for a new C-level position, right? You want somebody who can actually thrive in this environment. So and we had organized this. We even have a whole model. We had a whole global readiness profile thing that could help people figure out all these areas, 26 different areas. But in the end, it was funny because we would try to help people pinpoint which area do you need to develop the most. And almost every leader who ha wanted this for his group or his team, he would look at it and he says, "I want people to improve in all of these. So why do we spend any time, effort, money getting evaluated on all of these first? Why don't we just put together programs to help people develop those things?" But they were all about interpersonal skills, intrapersonal skills, team building skills. There was a whole section that you would have loved the most because it was all about their career advancement and what have they done and how do they explain themselves or their resume, that kind of thing. So it's really, we're looking at specific skills. And I know you'll probably ask this question or you've been thinking about it because how does that differ from other places? And I'm happy to comment on that because San Diego, California, compared to Tokyo, Japan, are worlds apart, okay, in terms of the concept of global, right? Tokyo it's a global hub. That's and San Diego isn't. So San Diego is, as we were saying today, it's more like if anything, it's more like Shizuoka, right? It's not Nagoya. It's and I love it here. I absolutely love it. And there are businesses here that are using our services, but it's from a very different angle. You mentioned global or global readiness, and they look at you and go, "Why?"
What do you, and so when you're taking moving from like a domestic role to a global one, what are the gaps that you see?
So the biggest gap is about, I would call it, gosh, the negative way what I would say ignorance. The positive way I would say lack of experience or awareness of what other cultures are, what they how they might respond. So When I graduated from Monterey Institute, that was an MBA program in international management. And I remember going out on interviews in the Bay Area. And there were a lot of high-tech companies already there. It was already considered Silicon Valley. I grew up when it was the apricot orchards, but then it became the Silicon Valley. And those people, you would talk to the HR people and say, "Hey, I've got this degree in international management." And they say, "Well, yes, we do have an international operation. In fact, it just started. We've started our German operation." "Oh, really? So what were you looking for in the person that you sent over there?" "Oh, well, we just looked around. We asked, has anybody had any experience with Germany?" And one guy went to Munich on his honeymoon. So he's the one who went. Like, wow. And I hope that we've gone, but that's just, it's 3 decades. There's still, if you know, I've read several cases and stories and met people that, and I'm sure you've met them over in Tokyo, where like they assigned this person to run this operation over here. They just think they're going to come and just run things the way they did in New York or Chicago or LA, or then it just doesn't. So it's, I would say it's that, like I said, it's ignorance, lack of awareness. It's like, okay, at least read Aaron Meyer's book, if not Trumpenauer's and Hertzberg. At least be aware of the. And I would love it if everyone took the attitude of, I want to learn about the other culture I'm going to, right? So I'm going to read about it. And then after I read about it, take a seminar as much as I can, a workshop, coaching, whatever, then forget it all, or at least pretend I don't know anything about it. Because if you go over there thinking, "Oh, I know how the Japanese do things, I'm going to do it right," it's like,
I give you
gets you into more
a
trouble.
flip side of that. I do most of the coaching I do is around with middle managers, Japanese middle managers, and it's not about language communication, but about communicating up, also communicating out. But oftentimes, they don't understand how to communicate overseas as well, whether or a local foreign manager. And that's in Tokyo, working with foreign capital companies. That's almost such a realistic global leadership skill that's needed. And oftentimes you have leaders coming into Japan and they might not know Japan, and they might also not know how to convey the challenges in Japan back to APAC or back to HQ, which I think is the biggest job for a CEO in Japan.
In Japan, that's operating, right? They're like the subsidiary head, or they're the country manager. Exactly. I've seen it so many times. You've nailed it. That is the core challenge.
It's tough. What one strength of Japanese leadership culture do you wish American companies would adopt?
Japanese leadership culture. So first of all, you know how hard it is to pin down who the leader is in a Japanese organization. So that's not the thing I would necessarily want to adopt, because you're always living in this in between uncertainty. But it might be, the easiest thing to say is listening. So Japanese leaders, Japanese people in general, are better listeners. It's just in my experience. I mean, I still remember long time ago, when I first got to Japan, and I was talking to somebody, and I said, "I noticed that in Japan, when people say something, like when I say something to them, I don't necessarily even hear if they agree or disagree. I just the, and they said, the person said, "Oh, well, we Japanese have a different room in our brain for other people's ideas." Guess that's the way to do it. That would be, it would be wonderful if, like, American leaders, particularly, right? I'd probably throw in a lot of European leaders, not so much the Scandinavians already get this, it seems, but Spanish, Italians, French, whatever. It would be great if they could just absorb, hear something from from their staff, and then ask more questions about it, and then withhold judgment, and just kind of let it settle, right? The way the Japanese do that kind of thing, it's pretty amazing when it works.
I was in an AMT training session once on communication skills, and one of our facilitator wonderfully said, "You need to create an angel advocate." And we're like,
Oh,
"What
yes.
the heck is that?" Because everybody's got a devil's advocate, which I think is what America is exceptional at, is we always want to play that devil's advocate. And I remember seeing the AMT training and going, and you said, let's create an angel's advocate where the
We're for
idea
angels.
comes out and you adopt it. Let's move on it and say, and what else?
And we've done since then. So we introduced that. I can't remember. I mean, it's so great that we go that far back because you were at the time that we were actually gathering these, as you said, it's 20 years ago. So what would happen is we were, as I said, we were getting paid to develop ourselves, right? So every seminar I attended, every ACCJ event and membership in these business organizations, our library filled with, got to one point over 500 books. That's all business expense. This is paying for my education through the business. And that was a concept. I can't even remember who first articulated it, but I remember it was one of our facilitators who said, look, let's just do this. And so for you guys, we just did it. Later, we did a couple of experiments with this where you would give a larger group broken into like six different tables. You have three tables analyzing something. You can do this great over Zoom, by the way, because you can separate the rooms. They can't hear each other, right? In the breakout rooms. And you say, okay, the only rule with your group in this brainstorming session is whatever the first person says, you need to have an angel advocate. Like we just said, you're going to say yes, and then you're going to say and then you can say whatever you want. And the other group was the only thing you have to say is, but. You don't even know yes, no, just say but. And then we add up at the end, like which groups had more fun, which groups had better ideas, which groups have more ideas, especially. And the more, it's like three times more generally from the group that's being encouraged, right? Because you got an angel advocate.
Exceptional. If no one takes, and you can stop the podcast now if you're listening to this on your just take that one idea and run, people. This is
There
great.
we
It's
go.
great stuff. What one strength from the US do you think the Japanese companies could benefit from?
Okay, so it's the flip side in a sense. It'd be assertiveness. You have something to share it at the time, and you can always make the time. We had one of our modules we worked out with a failed bank, by the way, now, but they were the fourth largest bank at one point. They gave us the thing that you might like to use, the acronym CUDA, right? Communicating up, down, and across. And we just modify it. You and us modify it for across the oceans, right? Or across cultures. For them, we're just across, meaning the same level. But so many Japanese will hesitate. They won't speak up, or they'll think they've lost the chance. And all they needed was a phrase to get back to what we were just saying 2 minutes ago. Then you can say what you wanted to say. Because ultimately, it's something my son taught me when he was probably 8 or 9 years old on a little league team, and he had some American friends they played some baseball with, and he'd seen it in America and in Japan, and he said, Dad, if you ask a Japanese person how good they are, you gotta increase it. You gotta increase it 2 or 3, whatever, but on a scale of 10, at least 2 or 3. And an American tells you how good they are, you gotta cut it down. You gotta bring it down. So basically, we're saying it's wonderful if the Japanese would speak up more. It doesn't mean they have to become a super aggressive type of person that we were trying to get to tone it down on the other side, but that's what I would say is something I would just love to see more of it, because often the quiet ones, as we know, have the more thoughtfulness and they have a good idea. And if they leave the meeting thinking, well, I didn't have a chance, no, you didn't take the chance.
That's great. Yeah, that's that assertiveness goes a long way, and
And I have you seen, and I don't know if it's still true, 'cause, and I'm not a fluent Japanese speaker, so I didn't use those dictionaries, but someone told me way back in the day that the adjective, if you look up assertive in Japanese, the word is like aggressive. It means aggressive. So being assertive, that's just a good concept to have in mind, even if they have changed the word by now, because they probably put it just asatubu or whatever, is in Japan, sometimes directly expressing a strong opinion is seen as aggressive, right? It's like, omakase, what do you want? So,
It does have advantages. I know a lot of people in
absolutely.
business and at home.
Oh, yeah. At home, much better.
It always goes, you always we always code switch into English if especially if it's something to do with raising children.
Yes.
because we don't want to pussyfoot around
Right. There you go. And what's the
that
word for pussyfoot in Japanese?
which
I tend to think there probably isn't one, although there's probably a lot of it.
That brings me to my next topic. We've talked about Japanese and U.S. leadership. Let's talk about generational leadership and
Okay.
generational differences.
Yeah.
What have you noticed?
Wow. Well, that's a that is a so first of all, I can never tell what generation I really am in. Well, I'm supposedly a boomer, but then I learned it's not really boomer, it's Jones. So the Jones generation is like late or very late 50s, like 1960 to 64 or 60 to 66 or something like that. It's not quite Gen X and it's not boomer. So that we're in between boomer and Gen X because we're jonesing after what the 60s generation had, right? The boomers that are born in like a late 40, 50 to 60, like they had the summer of love and all that. Summer of love, I was 5 years old. I wasn't experienced. That's not my generation. Come
But
on. So yeah, so I have seen the generations, especially in Japan. I started to see a big shift, which was there was almost when they talk about the lost decades, right? The 90s and 2000s, it seemed like a lot of the leaders were pretty lost there too. Like they were like not they kind of lost their footing because they had lost that bubble experience. Like they thought it's going to go on forever. It's gone, and then it's gone. But then like 10 years later, following that, like in the 2010s to 2020, I started seeing younger up and coming people that didn't have that expectation anymore. So on one side, you could have said, well, they're really lost. And yeah, that's part of the people that, opted out of the whole corporate game. But those who were in it seemed to have a lot more energy, a lot more enthusiasm, a lot more positivity about the future. And I still see that from the youngest generation, right? The up and coming ones. Overall, the frustration that I see with Japan, but it's understandable, is lack of desire to go outside Japan. We talked about global readiness, and one of the questions we had on that initial quiz, we just put as a simple thing, like, are you open to a short or long-term overseas assignment? And are you willing to live anywhere? Well, you would think on a scale of 1 to 4, you might get a 3 or 4, like you and I would, especially. But then the longer I lived in Tokyo, by the way, the less I was ready to say, yeah, I want to go somewhere else. Not many places I want to go.
That's a it's a big challenge for in recruitment. One, just a lack of younger generation, because I think there's a lot of the ignorance of youth brings in a lot of brilliant ideas, and it really starts to challenge the older generation, which it's just a cycle that's been going on for thousands of years. You read Plato, and there's still the complaining about the young generation. It's not a new thing, but it's the cycle that it really works well for building up an organization. And I find that having a lack of that youth and energy really hinders a lot of Japanese forward
Yeah,
thinking.
I agree. And that's the frustration I've had ever since I've been in this game, development game, call it, because now and we focus, as I said, less on global thinking and more on the development side. We're developing leaders, we're developing teams, we're developing people's business skills, right? Those are the things we're really have always been working on. But having that energy, the frustration I find so often is that I have more energy. And I realize, and some of the companies that hire us, well, we want that energy. Okay, well, okay, so maybe it's time for me to really focus on the energy. So I have in the create get a grip on creativity. We do stuff with Qigong, and I do things with transcendental meditation, anything. I didn't know that that was the thing that's actually helping me, but obviously was. But it is a frustration. It started, and by the way, I don't know if you felt this at Focus Core, but I definitely had it in the early days of AMT Group with the first few hires, because we had four founders, so we only needed a couple extra hires, right? You'd hire administrative staff. We tried hiring a salesperson. These other, and I'd get so frustrated. They weren't as motivated as I was. And I hadn't come to the realization that you're not going to probably find people as motivated as you are. So that's been, and so it is a frustrating, and it's, I love working with companies that want that, right? And I think they're starting to see it. Like, we're working with a couple of travel companies, for example, and I want to let them know, it's like, look, whatever your job is in this company, you're helping people travel. Travel, is that a good? I'd say it's peaceful travel around the world is probably one of the best things we can do for the planet, other than the greenhouse stuff. Okay, you gotta figure that thing. But for the planet, for understanding, for international relations, I mean, this is, you guys, you could be thrilled. You're not a tobacco company. So I try to instill that. Sometimes they get it.
That's, I remember first time meeting you and getting your business card with
Oh, my.
CEO on it, and
Oh, right. Chief enthusiast. Yes.
chief enthusiast, and there
Where
was
was that? Where was that? I'm curious. ACCJ or
no,
what?
that, well, I don't know. I think we came
Oh,
over to
when
your
we were
office
trying
in
to do that.
Ichigaya. Yeah, I think it
Right.
was.
Right.
I remember
Okay.
going over to your office trying to figure out, probably met you at ACCJ and going
Right.
over and saying, "What's this guy do? He's chief enthusiast on his
Yeah.
business card," and it was the power of language, and it was one of the things that you guys always were talking to us about was be very careful with the language you're using, because you hear, and I think this goes back to the generational thing, the language that younger people sometimes use, or the words that pop culture puts in around different ailments or around energy is very detrimental. Because if you start saying, "I'm the chief enthusiast," you're all of a sudden, you need to be enthusiastic. And I
Yes.
remember one time I was promoted, and it was a change into a director role. I changed my, and it's
Yeah.
all about, that's atomic habits, right? In a
Okay. Yeah.
nutshell, is that you are now that person. And you start to act that way once you become that.
Yeah. And I remember there were times, especially people ask me this a lot because I've all the networking I do and still love to do, and you get out there, they think, oh, you must just love this. I was like, no, I love the interactions with people when I'm in them. I don't, I'm just like probably a lot of people, you're walking towards the event and you're going, do I really want to do this? How do I really, why did I put myself into this thing? I didn't quite feel that an hour ago, but maybe a little bit like, oh, that's no, but I'm going to be talking with David. I like David. But I remember, and the thing is if I had that on the business card, there's just no way you could give that and go, yeah, well, my name's Andrew.
Got a target on my back.
Or yeah, or the classic, oh, who let you into this place? Oh, no, they let anybody into this place. I can't talk like that if I'm the chief enthusiast. That's not how a chief enthusiast talks. Maybe I need to remind myself of that a little bit more.
Well, I think that's the thing, that we can give the generational differences, both younger and older, is just that awareness of the language and how that,
Yeah.
and that leads on to what I was going to ask you about storytelling,
Yeah, sure.
because the stories that we tell also form who we are, and you're a big proponent in storytelling, in leadership development, and in presentations. So talk to us a little bit around that.
Around storytelling. So I don't want to be a storyteller,
Yep.
but I
Except
need
in your
to,
music, you got
right?
some
Well,
good storytelling in your
yes.
music,
Well,
babe.
that's true. So you want to have, although we don't, not quite as good as like one of these great country stars. I
Oh.
my my there's a couple of good stories though in there, isn't there? Yeah, best seat in the house. I love that. Because that's all based on true stories. That's probably the key word, true stories. When I hear storytellers, the power of story, and you almost start to think, oh, okay, well, that's like fable or myth or this. That's not the storyteller that leaders need. They what the storyteller, I would say, the storytelling or the telling of your story, maybe that's the way to say it. It's like you want your story to be compelling. So when you're whatever you're talking to people about, but you also want it to be true. And I've run across so many people recently. It's just, especially in this current world. I mean, it's just a lot of exaggeration. It's a lot of what that guy called truthful hyperbole and said, no, you don't need to do that. But what you do want to share is the conflicts that you've overcome, right? Or the challenges. That's what the story that's compelling, right? You look at any good Star Trek episode or any good, even the Seinfeld episodes that were about nothing. Today, if you watch the whole, I'm watching now the series for the first time, Lost. I hadn't gone through and seen it, but it's, it's all about overcoming challenges, overcoming conflicts, and that's something that you want to really be able to share because that's what people are interested in. And then they can be interested in you, and you make yourself more interesting by remembering the stuff that you've overcome. And a lot of people just want to gloss over that and talk about all the rosy things. So that's what I would think with stories.
And I think that's important, especially in Japan, because we have humility and being
Yes.
humble. And I love, you got a sales guy that says, yeah, we're the number one company in Japan. We've been around since 1998. And when then you have someone from Japanese company going in and saying, yes, we haven't been around very long. We're a smaller company. We've been around since 1912. We don't have very many people. We're a smaller company with 1,000 people. And it's a very different just kind of undercuts. And so I think that's of leaders in that come into Japan that have that hyperbole truth need to be very careful.
Totally agree. Totally agree. And the other thing about stories, they have the thing that I've noticed that Japanese miss out a lot is beginning, middle, end.
Oh, yeah.
There's a conclusion. It's not a ijo desu. I'm
Mm-hmm.
done. Okay. Or just never quite getting done. Just doing the around and around and around it goes, and where it stops, nobody knows, kind of thing.
Or just stops. Let's talk about hybrid leadership.
Okay.
That's a big topic since the pandemic. And I know it was interesting, like during the pandemic, to watch companies that you could sell the companies that had good management because they could figure out how to build teams even though they were online and away from people. And they realized that, okay, we need to manage by objectives, not by micromanagement. And a lot of Japanese companies just fell apart that way.
Ah, interesting. So you saw it firsthand.
You could really
Going,
tell. I
well,
mean,
yeah, and especially because what kind of job? I mean, what are they going to do? Work from home in the, well, I mean, the classic rabbit hutch life or the very small rooms that are used multi-purpose, and now you're supposed to have an office there. All that stuff
that's
is
hard too.
very complicated. So hybrid, you mean so when people are in person, maybe 2 days a week or whatever,
Three
and but
days.
they're in, and then they're out and it's remote. So
Yeah.
I love the remote world, but I realize, so I love it and I know that it's not as good for some things. It's actually better for something. We touched upon it a minute ago, right? If you have a 12 person meeting and you're at a meeting in your office, you can't just say, okay, I don't want you, we've done it. We used to do it in training too. You like pair up and discuss this, but with the Zoom meeting, you set up six breakout rooms. Say, I want you, or, in pairs, I want you to discuss this. Now come back. Hey, what do you guys think about this? It's a better way to get more ideas flowing. You can have one-on-one, real one-on-one sessions. So, but they need some skills, right? Using the camera, using their body language, getting rid of some of the extra technology. People are still thinking, well, I'll just put up a bunch of slideshow and then I'm a tiny little square over on the side. You can't even see what the person's saying. I often use, like today, I'm using just a natural background only because there might be something I want to show you, right? And so I don't want it to like fade in and out of the screen, things like that. But the simple thing, and it probably matches regular leadership as well, but it's communication. So are you communicating enough with your people? Some people, if you try to communicate with them every day, they're going to think you're being micromanaged. Other people, if you're not communicating with them every day, they think you're abdicating your whole role as a leader. So you need to have those conversations early on and continuously using at least a model, something like situational leadership or SL2, one of these things that says, hey, where are you in this process, right? It's like, you and I, very comfortable having this kind of conversation because you do a lot of these. I've done several of these. It's fine. I don't feel any awkwardness at all? Some people do, though. And how can you avoid it? One simple trick, just like we're doing today, or I taught friends, it's like hiding my self view. I don't see myself right now. How many of you, when you're on a video call, are you seeing yourself? When you see yourself, it's super distracting by design. That's by evolutionary design. We're most interested in ourselves. So when you see yourself somewhere, like, wow, I wonder what's going on with that. So instead, I hide the self view and I can focus on the core. David Sweet,
Right, there you go.
PhD.
How do you think leaders could build and sustain high-performing teams better that way?
Right. So the reason is you can check in more often or and for shorter time. You don't have to book the meeting room. You don't have to, right? You can just have people call in. You're going to have your team meeting at such and such a time. It's on the team calendar, or it's individuals. They're booking on their using your software, and they're able to get that one-on-one, truly one-on-one with you. A lot of times people feel they leave their manager, right? They don't leave their job, they leave their manager. Well, how often can you have a regular check-in with your teammates, with your subordinates, even if it's just to say, hey, how are things going? Well, I want to make sure you know I'm here and really be there, not, okay, I'm also working on my email over here and I'm also got a presentation up there and I'm not really that whole thing. But that's where I feel like you can manage even better. That said, nothing beats the actual face-to-face in the same space, because there's got to be something odd that it's 6 at night here and it's 10 in the morning over there. And
And I think, the trend is definitely going back to the office. And that hinders, I mean, from a recruitment side, it definitely hinders diversity hiring
Absolutely.
for any parents and for older
Yeah.
employees that are taking care of even older parents.
And young people who've gone through the pandemic and know that they can get just as much done remotely, and why do I have to spend all this time commuting? That's a huge advantage. My son just went through the hiring process, just got hired, and they're starting out 100% in person as he learns the business, but then it's going to be a lot remote, I believe. That's what he said, because there's no way that they want to be stuck to a. I mean, I don't know what your first job was. Mine was 8 to 5 in Honolulu, Hawaii. So I still love the Aloha shirts, but 8 to 5 was the longest 9 hours I ever experienced in my life coming out of college. And now, well, what am I doing in this office while everybody else is going to the beach?
But there's the impromptu meetings, the impromptu training. Those things are so valuable. So, like you, I'm kind of torn that it's a great thing, and it's also not so great in being able to, as an entrepreneur. It's like, okay, I want my people there so I can help them.
Yes. And the other thing you want it, but the problem is we also have a feeling, at least my age, I want them there because I still had the feeling. I remember when it first happened. My first experience with it wasn't the pandemic, it was 3/11. You remember 3/11? And then all of a sudden people are working from home, and I'd get this out working from home. Like, you're working from home. What are you? Okay, well, let me see the output. No. I was not as bad as the Japanese companies that are mon or the mouse monitoring
Oh,
things,
geez.
but they actually do it here too, I found out. Oh, I just learned in LA, this woman, and she's actually under getting a lawsuit going on because she, get this, the company, I mean, I'm laughing about it, but it's horrible. The company is monitoring if the person is at home by monitoring mouse movement on their computer. So this staff person, you could buy some kind of device that moved your mouse around as if it was real. And now she's facing a lawsuit from the company and all kinds of issues. But I mean, come on. If you're doing a job that's that something is wrong, like very wrong. We want people to be able to work and enjoy their work, succeed at their work. That's where, I mean, you and I are, I mean, you also do some of this exact same work if you're coaching people, but in your recruitment work, it's definitely you want to find matching things that this person's going to be happy there, right? So,
That's what we try to do. Well,
yeah.
speaking of happy,
Yes, sir.
let's talk about some music.
Okay.
Because now we've For those of you listening, this is going to be the second or third hour of our podcast. Talk about how music has, helped in the way you teach leadership and communication.
So I'll tell you how it didn't help. Or several ways it didn't help. But one of them was, I don't know if you remember the original Office, The Office from England. Not the, not the, yeah. Okay. So you saw the Ricky Gervais
Oh, many
version?
times. Yeah, we used
Okay.
I had a yeah, anyway,
Oh,
go ahead.
no. So, right. So they, the one time, and he tries to motivate the people. He does this motivational speech and he has this music going and he can have the music going. He comes in and goes out. I never, ever since I saw that, and I thought I'm never doing that kind of thing again. So I've never fully used music in that sense. The only kind of using music in training has been occasionally I'll put as a background, like light music, or I loved when we did self-awareness type exercises and I put on Ziggy Marley's Gotta Be True to Myself kind of thing. That kind of stuff is hidden. But what music, the connection I'd like to make for you or the listeners is more in the performance of music compared to performing, like training, right? Doing coaching. And that's, it's a one-way street. Performing on stage does help performing when you're on a training stage or a workshop leading stage. It does work that way. The other direction doesn't help. Because being comfortable, and I still remember the time where my bandmate Steve said, "Well, Andrew, how can you seem a little bit nervous tonight." He's like, "How can you be nervous? You're on stage all the time. You're always presenting. You're always giving." I said, "Steve, this is a very different thing. I have to hit the chords right and sing the lyrics right and be together with all these other guys and do everything kind of right. That's not the same thing." So, but I would add, so that's the main point I want to make there is anybody who wants to get into music, it's great because that's going to help you probably in every aspect, especially like creativity. But for me, the music is it's psychotherapy. Writing songs is psychotherapy.
Nice. I find the thing that the music helps for me is performing with others, and that because I'm not naturally a team player. And so being with playing music, one of the things that you already alluded to is one, you have to listen. Not to you have to listen to what everybody else is doing, because if you go off on your own, the whole band sounds bad. And so it's being able to listen first and foremost, and second, that the band is most important. That it because that's the experience that you're giving the listener. And in running a company, it's what's the experience you're giving that they're having with AMT, that they're having with Focus Core. It's not, it's not David out there or Simon out there. It's the band is performing, and what are we giving them?
Yes. And at what point, and I've learned this more than any other place at the Bauhaus in Tokyo, Roppongi, where the band, everyone has a different role and a different time. It's like, yes, it, and I learned it reluctantly as a front man. I was more of a reluctant front man, probably both in the company and in the band. I was a director because I was a founder, but I wasn't initially the president. That was after I bought out other partners who left Japan. So the being a front man and realizing, oh, at this moment you're supposed, that's what you're supposed to be. And oh, but now it's a lead guitar solo, so throw the attention over there. It's like it's truly different. It's almost, I almost get a feeling I hate to say it, but it works for Japan too, is baseball. It's almost more like baseball than like basketball because that's why everybody's running around all the time. No, sometimes it's like, no, it's that person's turn. It's like, boom, go. You're all now supporting. You're still playing, right? But you're supporting. And then another time's like, no, you're the front man, so you better get out there and like you got to go over the top. At least I do, and it works.
Well, it's giving again, it's the experience that you give people, you give your customer. And I think that's a big part of leadership is what's the experience you're giving your employees, your coworkers, or the customer. And I always liken that to going to Universal Studios or going to Disneyland. Both great amusement parks, and they both are cost about the same, and they're both doing basically the same thing. But you go into Disney World, it's a magic land, and the music brings you back to when you were a kid, and Walt Disney, anything is possible, dreams come true, blah blah blah. But you go in and you get Universal Studios, you get the whole coaster 0 to 60 and the Spider-Man ride and Harry Potter, and you're in excitement. Different
Interesting.
experience, but
Yeah.
there it is one better than the other. It doesn't matter. It's what you want to give that customer or that employee.
Yes. And what are they? And one thing leaders tend to forget, I like to ask this question. It's at the beginning of the Get a Grip leadership book, is I ask people to do sentence completion exercises because this is just a great way to access your subconscious, really. If you just rapidly write 5 to 10 answers to the same sentence stem, it's amazing because you get the first two or three right away, and it's like, well, I'm supposed to write some more. Well, I don't know what to write. But one of them, so it's leaders often forget, and I find myself saying leaders often forget who defines their leadership. It's just like a company. It's the customer is defining the success of a company, right? It's the staff level, the people who are reporting to you. Define your leaders. You can't, well, I'm a very open-minded. Then you take a survey of the followers, like, I can never see him. He's always busy.
Awesome. But that's moving into the future. What's your vision for developing global talent over the next
Oh,
decade?
yeah. I love that you said global talent because it's the whole, as I said, developing global thinkers. That's what we've been doing since 1992. I'm not sure if that's going to remain the tagline. This will be quite a difficult issue amongst ourselves here, but we have our core values, which are creativity, listening, encouraging, empowering, and balance. We've had those as like we call them action values since before companies were making their value statements. We were doing it from way back. I know that's going to be core. I feel the vision now is really focusing on the development side. So developing leaders, developing skills, and developing teams. And what does that mean? It means more hybrid stuff like you're talking about. It means more access to people's real motivation and their real goals, whether they're really trying to accomplish, and helping them get there in a professional sense. So we often say we're working with people, helping them to get in better touch with themselves so they can have better working relationships, better professional interactions. We're not a family counseling firm, we're not life coaches, but we touch on the things that are truly motivating, that energy, and working with people who want that, who f and feel, oh yeah, a coach could help. That a coach or a or coaching, I'm not even sure. It's funny, I do a lot of work and I meet regularly with one of my favorite coaches that we used to work with each other. And then he's coached me in times, I've coached him. But he's now in Canada. And we often say, we don't even like that word so much because even if, you always have to ask people, what is a coach to you? And some people have had really negative experiences with even business coaching. So it's like, let's find, well, what is it that you really need? Well, I'd like some help with this skill. I want to improve this. Okay, so are we improvers? Maybe that's what we are, improvers.
Yeah, I'm always hesitant. I've had talks with other guests about coaching, and I've had mixed. I'm certified ICF coach, so I've done it, but it's not. And I see value, but I also see value having a coach, like a running coach as well. And I see there's differences on that. But for some of the people I coach, I give advice because that's what they need. They need teaching, they need skills, they need challenged. And it's not per se what would be an ICF certified coaching style. And I just, in some ways, it just blurs. What I love what you're talking about. It's like we're improvers. And goes back to our, what language are we using? What's the word that we really need?
I had one of the first interviews way back. Somebody asked me, oh, they introduced me as a thought leader, and I said, I don't know if I'm a thought leader. I'm a thought expresser. I'll express my thought, but these are, leader, a leading thought. It's like, okay, I've read a lot of this stuff. I apply as much as I can. I see what works for me, and all advice is autobiography anyway. So yeah, this is what worked for me, and here's what I suggest. You want to try this, and you're the one who has to go do it. So people say, well, then why do I need a coach? Well, why does anybody need a coach? Why does Tiger Woods have a coach? I mean, he's not number one anymore, but every single tennis player on the tour has a coach. And all, believe me, none of those coaches can beat the players that they're coaching. I bet. I mean, because otherwise they'd be on the tour, right? So in that case, it's just a separate skill. Being coached, and I always say my favorite coach, the actual coach that's the best, is a video camera for any of my communications coaching stuff. It's like, let's see how it looks. That's
Amen.
where we see the biggest breakthroughs.
Well, we've been doing that. I mean, probably started it with you, was for the sales team, but I then did it with facilitation, and I still do it to this day with all my staff, is put them on video.
Great.
It be, because it just it teaches a lot for.
And they don't want to see people. I don't want to see I don't look like that. Well, yeah, you don't look like that because you always are looking at yourself in the mirror, which is the opposite of what you look like. And I don't sound like that. That doesn't sound like me. Right. Because you're hearing yourself through your bones and your mouth and your jaw instead of through your ears like everybody else does. So this is what you look and sound like to everybody else.
So
So.
any people that are looking for a job, my one piece of advice for you, get your iPhone out and ask yourself, do a self-introduction. What is your strengths? What are your weaknesses? Why do you want the job? And videotape that.
Yeah.
And then
And
watch it
show it to
back.
somebody and show it or yeah, well, show them the fifth version. Yeah, I love that's great advice. I'll take that advice. Got he's got an album. Oh yes. Oh, okay.
Isn't that a
If you're gonna
cool?
do that,
Look
if
at
you're gonna do that, if you're gonna do that, give me one second.
We're, for those of you at home, we're showing a video. We're showing our albums of the Rolling Stones because we're going to go through and do a Rolling Stones rapid fire round. This is the Rolling Stones
Damn it,
rapid
it's in the
fire.
laundry. It's in the laundry. So I got this shirt that the guy's made, and it shows it's the Stones tongue, right? Multicolored. And on the front, it says 60. And on the back, it says Rolling Stones 1962 to 2022, right? Because it was when they turned 60, which is why I'm working on this book called Interpreting 62. But it's all about the Stones. So I know you put that up there to get us to talk about.
We're doing the Rolling
I don't know
Stones
how high they're on your pantheon, but
on top. So
oh,
let's see.
there we go.
Yeah, when I was, I think when I started, I had around 40 Stones albums, Made in the Shade. We talked about this last time, and I was thinking, what was my first Stones? And it was Made in the Shade, which was a collection
Wow.
album. And it was cassette.
I've never even heard of it.
Made in the Shade. It's 1970s greatest hit. It's a, but it's a good
Can
one.
you imagine they had greatest hits in the 19 early 70s
It's
and
got
they win Rock Album of the Year 2024?
brilliant, right?
How do you do that? I mean,
Okay, so here's your rapid fire question.
okay, go for it.
First Rolling Stone song you ever heard?
It was either the one that penetrated the most was Angie. It was Angie. I think that was the one, but it could have been Jumpin' Jack Flash or Satisfaction, one of those bigger, even bigger hits. But Angie was the one that just killed me.
Well, see, that was the one that was on Made in the Shade. And it was, and it was like, yeah, blew me away. Really good one. Love that.
Unbelievable.
Favorite Stones album?
So I'm gonna go with one that you would never put up there, especially owning 40, Some Girls.
Oh,
And
it
the
definitely
reason
bets up there. Top
that
five,
is up
right?
there, okay, good. Because but for me, it's because that was, I think, it came out in 78 or 79, and that's when I was a junior in high school. I mean, the music I was listening to as a junior in high school, that was everything. So that like defines my my musical era. And so that song, that album,
Brilliant
great,
album. They had,
Some
and
Girls.
it was, that was a wonderful era where it had, it had flops. And it culminated with Some Girls, right? So you had Goat's Head Soup, Black and Blue, An
Wait, is that
emotional
right?
rescue.
Oh, emotional rescue,
And
right.
then, and I think that's some of their best work, but that again, that was best Stones guitar riff.
Oh, so this is a tough one because I mean, I've been persuaded. I don't know if this is my true first answer, but I've been persuaded that it's Jumpin' Jack Flash, because that just gets people up whenever they hear. Like,
Dun,
it's just boom,
dun, dun.
yeah. Although, I mean, Start Me Up also does that. I mean, and how do you do that with just two notes? So he's a
Yep.
genius, Keith Richards. I mean, guitar riff master of masters.
Okay, next rapid fire question.
All
We
right.
could get an argument here. This is good.
Uh-oh. Good.
Jagger or Richards?
Okay, this is too easy for me because I just almost idolize Mick as a front man. He's just the greatest front man ever. And Keith is the better musician. He's a cooler dude. He's got everything else going for him. But it's the charisma and the whole. And I don't want to have the lead vocal syndrome. I don't want to be like him. But come on. I mean, he defined to me just. Moves like Jagger. I mean, Keith can be, Keith is cool. He's very cool. And you might like him more, but I can't because he's Mick.
There you go. We'll agree to disagree.
Yeah,
Anyway,
so you're
moving
Keith,
on.
you're Jagger. No, that's good.
I'm
Yeah,
Richard.
that's why we could write songs
That's
together like they did in like
yeah.
McCartney and Lennon.
Favorite live performance or tour?
Oh, well, it was the one I went with my son. He was five. I believe it was the Bridges to Babylon tour.
Oh, nice.
I think it was either that or Voodoo Lounge. I don't know which one, but it was I went to both of those in Tokyo, and at one of them, yeah, two very interesting things happened. So it was one of those two concerts I would say is the best. One, I was sitting in the audience high up, and they started doing Angie at that like acoustic set thing they do,
Yeah.
and I just felt this energy just flowing up. You're like, what is this? I don't know. They inject something into the air. I don't know what. And the other was when I went with my son and they played Satisfaction as an encore. And I remember asking my son on the way home, so Sky, he was five. What was your favorite song? Can't get no. I like, can't get no. I can't get no. And then you realize that's the official title of the song
That's
is
right. I
Can't Get
didn't
No
know.
Satisfaction.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Underrated Stones track more people should know.
Okay, I'm gonna call the underrated or underplayed. I bet people don't even they might not know about it because it's not on the Some Girls album that I owned, even though it should be. I just love it. So it's a song. Oh wow, how does it slip my mind for just a second? It's a song that's it's on the Some Girls album, but it's not. So it's not on the album if you go to
So,
buy
yep.
the one that I bought. And it's Claudine. Claudine's back in jail again. I mean, that is hilarious or bad. I don't know what you want to call it. I mean, they're writing about a murderer who gets away with it kind of thing. I mean, but wow, what lyrics, and it's just a rocker, and it's like, and I bet they never play it live. Like so many of their songs, they don't want to do live, and there's
Man.
issues. That's about the Spider Savage death and Claudine Lange back in the day. People knew about it. I mean, it was a current theme. It was like in the news, and then they write a song, Claudine's back in jail again. Check it out. It is on Spotify.
That's brilliant. Good. And I one that I don't think anybody else wants to listen to, but I always love Satanic Majesties as an album. I love that.
Okay.
It's one of my favorite albums of theirs, but
What song is on it that you really like? Or
She's a Rainbow is kind
yeah,
of the one that
beautiful.
came off that one, right?
Okay, so I'm glad that's why you came up with the question, because you had a better answer than mine. That
No,
is no,
there's so
She's a
many.
Rainbow is a great underrated song. I listened
Yeah.
to it the other day. It's fantastic. I mean, they how can you say this about the world's greatest rock and roll band that even calls themselves that? But I say they are underrated. They're underrated, every single one of them. It's like, how many people say that they're, no, it's like, well, they're not as good as Led Zeppelin, you know,
Yeah.
they're not as hard as AC/DC, or they're not as soulful as this. They're not as, yeah, they're everything of everything is what they are.
And your last one, if you could
Yes.
join the band for one song on stage, what would it be?
So I'd be joining the Stones like at one of their. So first
Yeah.
of all, I don't know if, I mean, this is one of those things.
You're up
So
between Ronnie and Keith right
yes,
there.
right. So I'm gonna, okay, I'm gonna go right to something that your audience should relate to if they're anything related to Japan. I remember coaching a woman who was aiming for her MBA, and she was with Asahi Glass at the time, and I said, okay. So you need to be ready to like say what you're doing, working on this. Steve Jobs had this line where he's like, he talked to people on the elevator, what's your job? If they didn't have a good answer, they're out. So I said, now imagine the elevator opens and you get on, and there's the president of Asahi Glass. And she said, what was your question? Wait, you had me imagine what? Because the Asahi Glass, you know, the guy would never get on the company employee elevator. He'd be on the president's
The president.
elevator. That's how I feel if it would be with the Stones. So, I mean, would I actually get a word out? Would I stumble? I mean, here I am, Mr. Presentation Coach, and on stage, you're comfortable. I don't think I would be comfortable in that situation. But let's say I was. Then what I would love to do is sing Angie with them, because I want to hear Mick do the Andy part. He could do it where he says Andy instead of Angie, which is absolutely true. And then I would love it to end, or what, a fade out, but then break into Satisfaction, because that's my favorite
Oh,
song to
nice.
perform anywhere, anytime. I just love that song.
That's brilliant. I'm just sitting here thinking, as of today, because we'd have this conversation tomorrow and we'll have 400
Yes, different
different answers,
answers.
right? I put a little TNA.
Oh,
Wouldn't that be so
bam.
much fun?
Oh my God, she's my little rock and roll.
I just
How many Keith Richards songs make it into that? I mean, because he's the lead vocal on that is
Right?
Keith.
He's
That's
brilliant.
why, of course, you want it. Then Keith's your man, and
No,
okay, now I understand you.
that
Even better.
wasn't a, it's a great riff too. I
It
just
is. Oh, it's fantastic. One of the best. One of the best ever. You just listen to like, oh, I love that.
Well, it's been fun. We're not going to bore our listeners with more
No,
because we'll
no.
do it. You are, so I know that people can watch your TED talk. They should
Yep.
buy your four books of Get a Grip. They should
Sure.
sign up for Andrew's Axe. You are in the US, you're in Japan, you're online, so companies and individuals should reach out to you for training. Highly underline, highlight, underscore enthusiastically. You should
Thank
reach out
you.
to Andrew for training. It's wonderful as someone who's experienced.
Thank
Yeah.
you.
And
The
anywhere that
newest,
you'd like them to reach out
yeah.
to you.
Well, then, yeah, and then, yeah, Andrew at amt-group.com is the easiest way to find me. And the newest thing just dropped is the Get a Grip on Presentations audiobook.
Cool.
So the audiobook is really good because it's not just a book of me reading it after the first little intro. It becomes like a podcast. There's an interview
Oh,
portion
nice.
where the guy is, because he pins me down on all the things I say. He's like, wait a minute, man, what do you mean by this? So it gets really good. I highly
Cool.
recommend that
We'll
one.
put a link to that in the show notes, and we'll
Perfect.
also put a link to the Spotify Moonshots.
Oh,
Got a
nice.
couple albums out. They're working on
Yes.
a new one. Definitely go and
Yes.
give those a listen. If you like the Stones, you'll like this. So go and give it a listen. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you, David. Great talking with you.
I'm doing the uptown slowdown, yeah.